welcome into today's episode of the Blanket Coverage Podcast. This is episode 216. We've got week 4 NFL recap. We got week 5 college football recap. And of course, we got NBA recap and a preview of game 4 of the NBA Finals. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, Jack, how are you?
I am doing great. Thank you. It's always good to be back here in the podcast. And we do have some very fun news and things to report here. I know we have our tallies figured out for our NBA picks so far, because I know there are a whole lot that we've been going through since the season. Actually, since episode 1, we have had NBA picks in pretty much nearly every single podcast this entire time. Not everyone, but nearly everyone. So pretty fun for us now to look back on how we sort of done over a lot of that stretch. And then we do have some fun news going on in our other sports roundup. And we have a whole big piece about a certain man down in Houston, but we're going to get to that in a minute. But to touch on a couple of things before then, baseball, the ALDS and the NLDS have now begun. We talked a little bit about that beforehand, and the Astros are up 1-0 on the A's. They are playing currently. I'm not entirely sure what the score of that is right now, but looking at it is 5-2 Houston in the middle of the sixth. So the Astros looking pretty good despite a whole lot of hate, which is saying very lightly. There was a whole lot of hate with the Houston Astros before the season for very understandable reasons. And perhaps they can find themselves back in the World Series. It's certainly looking that way. But the New York Yankees are going to have to say something about that. They're up 1-0 on the Tampa Bay Rays. The Rays still a very, very good team, but cannot quite get over the hump to get into the ALCS in quite a while. So maybe, maybe not. That's a big question mark for this team that really has a lot more talent than they're getting far in the playoffs, but we'll see how that turns out for them. And lastly, in the NL, we do have the Dodgers and Padres playing tonight, but the Braves, my Atlanta Braves, opening up a huge win against the Miami Marlins today. The Marlins, as we have known, they are the only team in the history of baseball to never lose a playoff series. As the Florida Marlins, they are 7-0 in postseason series. They've been to the postseason twice and won World Series both times. So the Braves possibly being the first team to bring this team down. Looking in soccer, we have a couple of news. Edison Cavani, the longtime forward for PSG, which is Paris Saint-Germain, has been transferred to Manchester United in a pretty big move that can get some life boosted back in a Man U team that is looking a little bit behind in the race for the top of the Premier League. And after that, another news in the Premier League, Arsenal fired Gunnarsaurus, the beloved dinosaur mascot. The guy inside the mascot has been there for the last, I want to say, over 20 years. And Mesut Ozil actually saved him with his salary pay, says that he will pay for the Gunnarsaurus mascot to continue as long as he is still at the club. So pretty bizarre content coming out of England here, just some funny news in this area. Very good to hear that that job will still be saved. But now, moving on to our et cetera knowledge, we will talk about the NFL in our recap, of course, into a depth. But some fun news that happened last night, and fun depends on your point of view. For me, it's just sort of fun to hear this. Personally, don't have too much of a stake in this team down a little bit south from us here in Fort Worth. And Noah, remind us all what happened last afternoon.
Well, first I'd like to say thank you to Bill O'Brien, because he's the greatest thing that ever happened to the AFC South, and he's put the Titans in perfect position to win the AFC South this year by completely gutting the entire Texans organization. Bill O'Brien has been fired after 4 games, after the Texans started 0-4. Couldn't be happier about it. They lost to the Vikings this Sunday. We will get into the game later, but first I just want to talk about Bill O'Brien, because this man is truly a football genius in every sense of the word. He traded a first and second round picks in 2021, which is this upcoming draft, for Laremy Tunsil and Kenny Stills. You might say that Laremy Tunsil is worth it, but I don't know if Kenny Stills was really worth it there. He gave Laremy Tunsil a jackload of money too. Also, he traded DeAndre Hopkins this summer, in case I hadn't reminded you, for the you know, the standard one time per episode. I have to bring it up because it's just incredible. He traded DeAndre Hopkins for David Johnson and a second round pick. That's incredible. That's just incredible football genius that Bill O'Brien is. Incredible roster builder. Let's not forget that before he made this move, he got the previous GM fired and then took over the GM position last year. And so what did he do with that GM position? Well, he traded away Jadeveon Clowney for peanuts, traded first and second round picks for Laremy Tunsil and Kenny Stills, traded DeAndre Hopkins away, who I think was their best player still. I still believe that he would be the best player on that team. I think he is more elite at his position than Deshaun Watson is at his. On the bright side for Houston, you got four division titles in 6 years with zero conference championships. So that's a pretty stellar performance right there.
Not only zero conference championships, but also zero conference championship games attended.
And right. No, that's what I meant.
Which means you just have to win one game. If you win the division, you just win one game.
Yeah, which brings me to my next point that they blew their chance to get to the conference championship when they blew a 24-0 lead to the Kansas City Chiefs in the playoffs last year. And I would just like to throw in that he got fired before Adam Gase or Dan Quinn, both of whose teams are arguably worse. And my last note was that he just consistently underachieved based on every regular season performance that they threw together. At least one of those teams, I think, should have made a conference championship if they could have figured out the quarterback situation. But I'd just like to thank Bill O'Brien for all the contributions that he's made to the Texans organization. As a Titans fan, much love for Bill O'Brien. And I guess I have to change my Twitter profile picture now, which is a bummer.
You do, which yes, the whole point of your Twitter profile was to bully Bill O'Brien and the Texans, which was quite enjoyable. But yes, now it's going to have to be interesting because that might be slightly outdated now. But
so yeah, I'm taking suggestions, and I want to get into this right now. Who should be my Twitter profile picture? Who's the next person I control?
I don't know who's worthy of that so far in the AFC South. We can see, oh, I mean, at least for you personally, we can either have Ben Simmons or Josh Jones.
One that of those might be it. I don't know. Daniel I Jones, might become a Doc Jones. Rivers hater.
That is also true. You could always move on. You could always have the good old Ben Simmons with the red shot meter on 2K. That would always look nice.
Oh, that would be phenomenal. Like a very, very late release.
The latest.
Very like, late release, wide open.
Oh, man. But yes, moving on to our NBA recap. The Atlanta Hawks have revealed a new uniform for next season. Their city uniform, of course, their first three have already been revealed with a white and a red throwback as well as a black alternate that all look so, oh, they look so much better than their old uniforms. Good Lord, the Hawks uniforms are horrible. And now they look so nice, getting rid of that disgusting Volt green and finally getting back to our roots with the yellow and the red. And so with that, the Hawks also add in their MLK uniform. It is the first uniform in NFL or NBA history to have the initials or the name of a prominent figure on it. So pretty impressive there for the Hawks to do this. These uniforms are being sold at least for games coming up. They already have ticket packages with them that I actually went ahead and purchased. And now get how good of a deal this is. If you're a Hawks fan, please go get this deal if you haven't. But you get a authentic jersey, which you can buy this replica and authentic, which replica are just known as swingmans. And then there's this one that's like the authentic one. And now I got an authentic one of these jerseys of Trae Young that's going to be autographed. And it comes with a Hawks hoodie that's going to be like a darker, like a real dark gray. And the Hawks logo and the background, like filled into the logo, is the stained glass of the Ebenezer Baptist Church. And which is where Martin Luther King preached in Atlanta. And then all of that, plus of the 10 or so games they're going to wear these uniforms at home, I will have three tickets in the upper level for this. And that whole package was $240.
Wow.
Mind you, the jersey alone is $200 on Fanatics. Jersey alone. And of course, that, I mean, when it gets, it's not even released yet, but when it's released, the hoodie's worth 50, signature's worth at least another 50 on that. I mean, it's just, and that's not even counting the games yet. I mean, wonderful deal. So if anyone is an Atlanta or a Hawks fan, definitely recommend to check that out. But yeah, really cool initiative from the Hawks to do this, putting forth a really prominent figure that really everyone can get behind, especially in a year that's a lot of tumultuous state in terms of race relations and sports and how all of that ties together, is a really positive step forward and has been pretty much universally acclaimed by the NBA community and the Atlanta community. So really proud of my team to do something like that, and glad that I could help in, because the uniform sales, all of the money, or at least most of the money from the uniform sales, will all go back into underprivileged minority communities within the city of Atlanta. And I think they said economic improvement programs, if I'm not mistaken. They didn't list any specifically, but they said it was going to go back to helping a lot of their communities. So a really cool initiative. I'm really proud of the Hawks to do this. So just a side note, I saw in our NBA news recently before we dive into the finals. But now looking at the finals, Lakers Heat, we're going to be covering game two and game three. After a dominant game one victory, the Lakers came out in game two and, well, did it again. And yeah, seven straight game twos won for the Miami Heat in all of their finals appearances, and they couldn't do it this time. Anthony Davis is trying very hard for the finals MVP. Basically, after game two, everybody was convinced that the series was over and that the competition really was who's going to win finals MVP, AD or LeBron, and AD definitely made his statement. And now that's not trying to downplay LeBron's game. He played very well, but Anthony Davis went pretty much off. It was the first Lakers finals game with both starters getting over 32 points since Kobe and Shaq did it all the way back, I mean, what, almost 20 years ago. And LeBron James is 23-0 when leading 2-0 in the playoffs. And it's actually the first time he's ever led 2-0 in the finals, despite this being his 10th appearance. So before we get into a few other stats about this, what are your thoughts here on the way the Lakers were able to control these first two games and get out to a solid start against the Heat?
I mean, yeah, it's exactly like you said. Anthony Davis was simply outplaying everybody on the court. For both games one and two, if you look at the box score, Davis with 32. Of course, LeBron actually beat him out with 33, but he also brought down 14 rebounds. And I mean, just a generally incredible game from Anthony Davis, who played 40 minutes and went 14 for 20 from the field. That's a lot of big shots. And did it without shooting free throws or threes. Only shot one three-pointer, only shot one free throw. But what you're also seeing is whenever the Lakers win in decisive fashion, especially, it's always Rondo or Kuzma or one of these guys that's also stepping up. Now, LeBron and Anthony Davis were at another level, and one that I don't think the Heat of – well, I didn't think until game three, that the Heat could aspire to, or really had anyone that could aspire to. But we kind of know the game plan now, kind of transitioning into game three. We know that the game plan is that you have to have somebody on that team go off. And we talked about at the beginning of the series that they have about five or six guys that could go off on any given night. And in game three, that just happened to be Jimmy Butler. Now they're going to need other performances like that for the rest of the series, if they even want to have a chance to win, because if they don't get that, they're going to be in trouble.
And that's why this game three with the Miami Heat taking it was so big. The last time the Lakers blew a 2-0 lead was in the 1969 finals against the Celtics. Been quite a while with that. Of course, Lakers won again in their Mamba uniforms in game two. They're 4-0 in those now, but one other thing is that the Miami Heat also rallied down from 0-2 in the 2006 NBA Finals with an outstanding performance from D-Wade, which is a lot what we sort of see Jimmy emulating here. Tyler Herro, the youngest player ever to play an NBA Finals game, beating out Magic Johnson by just 8 days younger when Magic started in the 1980 Finals. He also was the first player born in the 2000s to start in it. But the biggest name here is, I know you're mentioning these bench players and these guys that weren't as big on this. How about Kelly Olynyk, a player that we really kind of forgot about a lot, but he had
37 minutes
and he had 24 points in game two, despite the loss, helped the Heat get down by only 9 in the fourth quarter. And he did it again. He had 17 points off the bench in game three. He's a player that we, again, seriously, I forgot about was on this team. And yet he really was able to step up and have a really good last two games. I mean, good for him.
And obviously they need it. It's the kind of contribution that they are really lacking because they are without two of their starters in Bam Adebayo and Goran Dragic.
And again, when you were talking about Jimmy Butler, he went 40-13-11, 40 points, 13. I think it was 13 rebounds, 11 assists. It is the third 40-point triple-double in the history of the finals, and he is the 21st player to get any triple-double in the finals. And four of those 21 players were in the game, which was Bron, Rondo, and Jason Kidd, who, of course, is one of the assistant coaches of the Lakers. So kind of ridiculous there that Jimmy was able to pull off something that was this incredible and do this in a big way. But when you mentioned Bron and AD were the biggest things here, Bron and AD combined for 13 turnovers, and Anthony Davis was invisible.
Minus 26 invisible. He wasn't anywhere to be found. And, I mean, if he's gunning for a Finals MVP, at this point, I might vote for LeBron for Finals MVP. I outscored him in Game 2. Granted, I'd just say Anthony Davis played better in Game 2. But not showing up in Game 3 was huge, and he had an atrocious plus minus at minus 26.
And Jimmy having scored or assisted set on 73 points. That's the second most ever in any finals game ever. And oh man, when you mention these role players, because again, we talked about how Linux stepped up, these guys for the Heat stepped up. You know who didn't step up in this game? Danny Green and KCP. Oh my goodness. They combined for 1 for 11. Come on. If you don't have those guys showing up for you, it's going to be really hard for this Lakers team to win, even when you have AD and LeBron. And this game is a perfect example of that.
They got plenty of contributions, though, from Morris and Kuzma.
That is true, but you need these guys to get these shots down, which we saw when they were able to do it in Game 2 and really help put the Heat away.
That's very true. I mean, these guys are starters. They're playing big minutes. You got to have some sort of contribution because Caldwell Pope was also minus 26 in 29 minutes. Only scoring 5 points.
No, indeed. And looking for our picks ahead, Noah has gone 37-17 picking the playoffs. I've gone 40-14 as well as 6-2 in games that we were not able to cover in one of our podcasts that I picked that Noah had not picked. So I'm not really counting those in the full rankings against each other. And we will now be back to our game 4 selection because we didn't really pick game 3, unfortunately. I'm not sure who you would have picked for game 3. I think I might have wanted to pick Miami in that one just because it'd be difficult for me to see the Lakers going up 3-0 at that point. But regardless, it's not in the standing. So now we sit here at game 4, and this one is a pretty hard one to pick because now the Lakers at 2-1. This game is absolutely massive. Of course, it doesn't end the series, but if it's 3-1 Lakers in the finals, that makes it pretty much over in my book. So I think Miami can come out and win this game with Bam expected to come back this game. I think Dragic might be out for the series at this point. I know it's not official, but I feel like he probably won't be coming back. But
right.
And if he does, it would have to be in like a game 7 or something, which is improbable, but possible at this point. And yes, I think that the Heat can win this game and force a game 6 out of the series and tie it back up at 2-2. And I think it's going to be a very hard-fought game because, again, this is essentially a lot of what the series is. But I don't know. I still have the Heat in this one. I just have a gut feeling that they're going to somehow pull this one out. But it's going to be difficult to stop this Lakers team, especially after a loss like that where LeBron walked off the court with 10 seconds to go, which I did not like that move.
I didn't like that move either, but I have the Heat in this game as well because I think Bam Adebayo is going to be a huge factor in his comeback. Now, the question is, how healthy is he? I think he's going to be ready to go. I think they're going to have him. He's a tough player.
And he is indeed. So we now can move on to college football, and boy, can we talk about some tough players with Max Duggan, Mad Max. Oh, man, it's finally so happy to talk about a TCU win. I know I doubted this team and really liked Texas coming into this game. And I almost got my pick if it wasn't for a fumble at the one-yard line. Almost was Texas, but yet Texas is indeed not back. No one really is particularly surprised by this one. 9 penalties in the first 12 plays of the game. A pretty big ouch in this game that, I mean, I don't know if you watched this whole game, but I did watch pretty much every single play start to finish, and oh, wow, it was ugly to start. And UT's 7 first quarter penalties was the most by any Tom Herman quarter ever in his coaching career. And, yeah, it was pretty rough. For this, Oklahoma State remains now the only undefeated Big 12 team left. And TCU having a bit of a genius coaching moment. With 6 seconds to go, the Frogs had the ball with fourth down. And what did they do? They took the snap, ran out the clock, and ran out of the back of the end zone. But on purpose, a lot of the TCU players were holding the Texas guys to make sure they couldn't sack them and then give Texas a couple of seconds left to pull something crazy. So because of that, holding does not lose you down automatically, but it does have the clock run off as well as not just gain you yards back. But because the game was already over and it was on a scoring play because it was a safety, the game was deemed over. So TCU basically just cheesed the rules to win the game in the end, which Texas did not like, but we didn't care. So it was great to see that. And a pretty smart coaching moment of Gary to sort of finesse the rules a little bit. Other two players to highlight before I'll let you get on a little bit about Tom Herman here, but Max Duggan, 20 for 30, 231 yards and 70 yards on the ground and two scores. And Johnson, Quentin Johnson, the wide receiver. I know you talked about him last week. He's becoming a star, 3 receptions for 70 yards, and he looked great.
Well, what we're seeing is TCU playing to their strengths, because our strengths this year are definitely on the perimeter of this offense. You're breaking in a new offensive line. You got to get your quarterback some design runs. You got to get some trickery going, and you got to get the ball out on the perimeter and get the ball into the hands of your playmakers. And I think Doug Meacham is doing that this year better than Sonny Cumbie has in his entire career at TCU. Because both offensive and defensive lines were not very good this week. Now, granted, they're going up against two pretty talented line units in Texas, but Texas does not have a great defense. I was very encouraged by the performance of Max Duggan. He is an absolute stud, and I mean, I was right. I don't think he can possibly lose to Texas. I don't think so. He looks like he is a different player on the field against Texas, and maybe he just looks like a different player this year in general, but he was very, very impressive.
I will never get over the fact that Sam Ellinger went 1-3 against TCU in his career. Like, I am so glad that that is now a fact that is set in stone forever and will never be lived down. And that really does bring a lot of joy to my heart that Sam Ellinger went 1-3 against the Frogs in his career. But for that, yeah, TCU looked pretty good in this game. We have Kansas State up against us this weekend. We're going to get into that in our Thursday preview podcast as normal. So we're going to hold off on a little bit of comment on that. We're going to wait to sort of dive into our preview. But at least 2 weeks in, just to have your thoughts, we're now 2 weeks in the season. We are 1-1. We'll get to the Iowa State game later, which that's why this weekend was a wonderful weekend for TCU, because we basically had best case scenario. But I think the Frogs ought to be ranked if we can beat Kansas State.
I think so as well. I think we should actually be in the Big 12 title conversation, considering we beat Texas, and Texas is still, I guess, in the Big 12 title consideration too.
Indeed. So looking ahead to our games, just a tad on Friday night, we had BYU win again. They beat a pretty weak Louisiana Tech team. Only reason I'm bringing this up is because BYU is still undefeated, looking pretty good to start the year. Florida taking care of business against the Gamecocks. Kyle Trask still looks elite. He has looked fantastic this season. And, oh, Will Muschamp, we knew he's the least resort, but, oh, the South Carolina Gamecocks have to do something. They have to do something.
This was a bad one. They didn't even look like they wanted to win the game at any point. And I brought – my friend goes to South Carolina, has been a South Carolina his whole life. His South Carolina fan – his whole life. And he brought, I said, when are y'all going to fire Will Muschamp? And he said, I don't think ever. He's bringing in recruits. And I said, well, why does bringing in recruits matter if you're not winning football games? And he said, well, that's a good point. But that's really the story of Will Muschamp's career. He's actually a pretty good recruiter. He's got a good recruiting staff around him. And South Carolina is a pretty good hotbed for college football. That being said, he hasn't done anything with his team, and it's just a rough tenure for Will Muschamp. I would not be surprised if his seat was very, very hot.
Well, and even then, I would say his seat is still – I would say his seat could get very, very hot. I would say right now it's lukewarm to warm, and the only reason why I say that is because losing to Florida is not – especially this year's Florida, is not really that much of a knock. Now, if this team loses to Mizzou, Vanderbilt, I mean, then we can maybe have a conversation. But as of right now, South Carolina is going to have to lose a lot more games this year because you basically can write off the Florida and Georgia games automatically because they're just too good. So I wouldn't be too blaming on him for losing this kind of game. But yes, the eye test does matter here. And like you said, they just sort of looked like they didn't really want to win a lot, which that is a big deal to be looked at. Looking at the rest of the SEC, Tennessee beats down on Missouri in a pretty predictable win. Not too much to say about that one, but the Vols keep on rolling. North Carolina State ekes out a ranked upset at Pitt. Pitt was one of those teams that was a fringe-ranked team, so not too shocking here. Coastal Carolina, Sun Belt, Fun Belt. They are still undefeated, beat down on Arkansas State, and Coastal Carolina is 3-0. Baylor, this one's a pretty big one. Baylor loses in double overtime to West Virginia. The Bears have never won in Morgantown. Never. At least in the Big 12, which is pretty ridiculous. So Baylor been a pretty sad outing here. Alabama crushing Texas A&M behind a stellar performance from Mac Jones. So I know you didn't weren't in love with Mac Jones before a lot of this, but he proved a lot of people wrong. I get A&M's not really a juggernaut, which for some reason SEC people still think they're really good this year. But yeah, Bama beat down on them. A&M is still ranked in the top 25. I think one spot above UT, which is pretty funny. But yeah, this was a pretty bad game for them. Georgia beating down on Auburn in a pretty surprisingly easy W, didn't allow a single touchdown, and Bo Nix didn't look too good.
Yeah, no, Auburn looked pathetic. I'm not giving up entirely on my Auburn chaos year prediction, but this was a very uninspired effort. But the a counterpoint to that is I think this Georgia defense, as much as we love to make fun of their offense, they don't really have a great quarterback, and they're not really a quarterback-friendly system. Their defense is absolutely crushing. It's absolutely brutal, and they're going to cause a lot of quarterbacks to have really bad days.
Which is why I'm really excited to see them match up against Trask in the Florida-Georgia game that could be one of the best Florida-Georgia games we've seen in a long time.
And I have as well.
UCF, the Knights have finally lost at home. The bounce house doesn't protect them anymore. 21 straight home wins snapped by Tulsa?
This was also the second year in a row that Tulsa beat UCF.
Yeah, pretty surprising here from the Golden Hurricanes. Other AAC news, Cincinnati wins an easy game against USF. Still waiting to see if Cincinnati can end up becoming a playoff team, as we've had some ESPN analysts predict, which is still kind of crazy. I know I agreed with that at the very beginning, but so far my picks are still intact. Mississippi State, they just beat the defending champs, and then they lost to the worst team in the SEC, but who else could do that but Mike Leach?
Exactly.
Wu-Pig-Sui, Arkansas somehow wins, and the Razorbacks have a victory that could be their only one of the season. Oklahoma State, as we mentioned, is still undefeated. They played Kansas, so no shocking thing here. But yeah, Oklahoma State's a team. When everyone says the Big 12 just sort of sucks now, I saw Gary Patterson was quoted on this, but he said, why does everyone always judge the metrics on if they're any good? Because Oklahoma State, I think, is a legitimately pretty good team. And I know they didn't have a good game against Tulsa, but now Tulsa with their UCF win is a lot more forgiven. So I don't know. I think Oklahoma State has potential to be a team that could maybe make the playoffs. At least mathematically, they definitely can right now.
And they definitely look like they're stringing together some nice performances after the clunker against Tulsa.
Speaking of teams that did not have nice performances, the Oklahoma Sooners are 1-2.
I couldn't be happier for my guy Spencer Rattler. We know how much I love Spencer Rattler. Just couldn't be happier for the guy. He's facing more adversity than any other Oklahoma quarterback. I can't wait to see his response to this.
I really, 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 really hope that TCU can knock off Oklahoma as well. I know they're going to be an angry team, and they definitely still are a good team. They still have Riley. They still have Rattler. Like, no one is saying that Oklahoma is a bad football team, but they certainly do look like a bad football team. Iowa State on the road pulls off the W. Iowa State was hosting. It was Oklahoma on the road. First time since 1960 they've won an Ames against them. The first time Oklahoma's had back-to-back loss since 1999. And they're out of the rankings for the first time since 2016. So a lot of firsts here for an OU team that we thought was just a juggernaut forever. LSU bouncing back with a huge win against Vanderbilt. They needed that one. Last second field goal lifts SMU over Memphis. The Ponies are still undefeated. They're the only 4-0 team in the nation right now. Kansas State continues their hot streak. They beat Texas Tech at home and set up a very fun game next week that we'll get to in our preview against TCU. Virginia Tech continues Duke's woes, and Duke is now 0-4, and Duke could make an argument for one of the worst teams in the Power Five right now.
I 100% agree. I just see a very, very deep lack of talent on that team,
which is very depressing to say, but yeah, they don't look good. Ole Miss gets a wild overtime win over Kentucky, and the Lane Kiffin train is moving. And Kentucky, a team that I actually thought they were going to be pretty good, has looked not too great so far this season.
Well, that's because they don't have an offense, and I don't think they ever will.
That is true. Florida State, they got a win. The Seminoles are now no longer the absolute worst team in America. They went down 0-14 against Jacksonville State, which is a real stat. And yet FSU was somehow able to win. So Mike Norvell was able to pull out a victory for a team that has looked absolutely embarrassing so far. And lastly, in ACC action, Clemson absolutely destroys UVA in a completely non-shocking affair. For your undefeateds, we mentioned SMU still at 4-0. At 3-0, we have Clemson, Miami, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, BYU, the Ragin' Cajuns, Coastal Carolina, and Liberty. 2-0, we have Bama, Florida, Georgia, Notre Dame, who didn't play this week, UNC, Tennessee, Virginia Tech, and Marshall. And then at 1-0, we had Air Force and FAU both play their first games and both win. Air Force coming out with their beautiful new Tuskegee Airmen uniforms that look absolutely fantastic. And so for your top 25, no change with Clemson and Bama. Georgia up one, Florida down one. They both swapped. Notre Dame at 5, Ohio State, Miami goes up one. North Carolina with a big jump. The Tar Heels are number 8 in the country. Pretty impressive there from Mike Brown's team. We then have Penn State up one at number 9, which, again, they haven't done anything yet. Oklahoma State tied for your top mover up to number 10, up 7. Cincinnati up 4 to 11. Oregon up 2 to 12. Auburn slides all the way down to 13th. Tennessee also up 7 to 14th in the country. So good for the Vols to bounce back after being put down due to the Big Ten team being added in. BYU also up 7 at 15th. Wisconsin up 3 at 16th. LSU up 3 at 17th, SMU hopping in the rankings at 18th, as well as Virginia Tech coming in at 19th, Michigan up 3 to 20, A&M down 8 to 21, Texas down 13 to 22, huge Yikes. Drop for the Longhorns, Louisiana Lafayette at 23, Iowa State at 24, and Minnesota at 25, those last three teams coming in this week. So, pretty big recap there from college football. We will catch you with all this information next week. And now with the NFL moving on to game of the week, what was a game that we all just love to see?
Oh my goodness. The Browns beat down the Cowboys in Arlington in Jerry World. The Cowboys were down at one point, 14-41. They almost actually made a comeback, but Odell went off this game, and it just appears to me that Dallas does not have a very good defense. Their defensive line does not look good. Their linebacking core does not look good. Their secondary as a whole does not look good. And I mean, just what a ridiculous game from the Browns, who we didn't even know they had this in them. Now, whether they were just playing the Cowboys or whether this is who they are as a team, I think is very much remains to be seen. But Dallas couldn't even win with Dak throwing for 502 yards and 4 touchdowns. It's ridiculous. Cleveland is now 3-1. What's going on?
Crazier stat than even that, which that is absurd, but even crazier. Dallas allowed 307 rushing yards. That is the most that they have allowed ever in their history. They have never allowed that many rushing yards in a football game until the Cleveland Browns did it to them at home. If you're Mike McCarthy, you got to be sweating a little bit right now, because this team and their defense, which, again, remember, he brought in a new defensive coordinator. This looks awful if you're them. The last time that Baker played here was when we went to the Big 12 championship game our freshman year. That's exactly right.
I was sitting on the 11th row.
Which that's pretty – I actually got – Or where did I sit for that game? Oh, I was in the upper level. I was able to get I accidentally, from one of my fraternity brothers, I got club seats, like sideline box seats, just randomly for the Ohio State game in Jerry World for 2018, which that was pretty insane. We got to meet Brutus. It was sort of funny, but yeah, for this game, that was pretty incredible. Dak Prescott is the first quarterback in NFL history to pass for 450 plus yards in 3 straight games. and yet went 1-2 in those games. And one of them was basically an accidental win because it was against the Falcons, and they only won because the Falcons are the stupidest team in the history of the NFL. So to quote Stephen A, in a very, very big W for him to say that. But yeah, for this one, it's pretty embarrassing if you're Dallas, say the least. You're a team that has an offense that is genuinely a good offense. We knew they were good on paper, and they're being good in person. If you put up that many points on this team in a short amount of time, if you put 24 points in the fourth quarter, that's not bad. They're playing fine. They're getting good numbers. That's not the problem. The problem is that your defense is allowing 41 points in three quarters to the Cleveland Browns. You cannot do that and win, and that is why they did this and lost. This is embarrassing if you're Dallas. You need to get a checkup. I get that the NFC East is mercifully awful this year, which is very helpful for the Cowboys, but because it's awful, I really think that anyone can beat anyone in this division. I really do, because even the Giants, like, they have a good defense. They played a good defense against Los Angeles. We'll get to that later. I mean, now they have no offense, but there is no team that is 100% worse than everybody else in this division. Everybody is just all mediocre. So
it's just all around bad. It's just bad football that I don't want to watch.
Speaking of good football or bad football that we don't want to watch, Thursday Night Football. Why is this a game? It was the Denver Broncos and the New York Jets.
I had it on and my roommate comes in and he's like, "Why are you watching this?" And I said, "Because I love football." And he said, "Yeah, but it's the Broncos and the Jets." And I said, "Honestly, you kind of have a good point. This game sucks." And this game was terrible. It was just bad football. Brett Rypien versus Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold ended up getting hurt. There was Mekhi Becton playing hurt, which was probably not a good idea. I mean, this was an all-around just awful effort from the Jets especially, but I was not impressed with what I saw from the Broncos either.
Adam Gase has got to go. I mean, we knew he had to go before, but, oh, man, you can't play. You can't do this anymore. I mean, it's just not fair. It's not fair to the fans. It's not fair to anyone. You can't do this anymore. It's just bad. And speaking of teams that are just bad, the Jaguars have lost to the Bengals, and the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow get a well-deserved W, because goodness, as Joe Burrow needed a W. He got 300 yards on the money. He was, again, very good in this game. He is, the first rookie in history of the NFL to have this many 300-yard games this early into the season. It is really impressive what he's done there with the Cincinnati team that has so many holes. I mean, we could have a whole podcast about how many holes that the Cincinnati Bengals have in their team, but really, really good here. I was pretty impressed by this team to come out and have a really good win. And yeah, good for the Bengals here.
I mean, granted it was against the Jags, but their offense looked really impressive. Joe Mixon finally got going, and Joe Burrow looked really impressive as well. Even though he didn't have quite as good of a game as he's been having, I'd say a win is absolutely worth it. And he had some very pretty throws in that game. I was impressed.
Exactly. After that, we have the Saints surviving a late comeback by the Lions. Detroit was 14-0 up. And then, of course, they allowed 35 in a row because it's the Lions. They had two late scores in the game to bring it back to a 35-29 game, but then lost with the same scoreline. So, yeah, if you're Detroit, another team on this list where you have a head coach that's got to be gone, Matt Patricia, pack your bags. You need to leave. This is getting sad.
Yeah, Matt Patricia's teams just look completely uninspired out there. You can tell when the coach is losing the team, and I think Matt Patricia is clearly losing the team up in Detroit.
It's really just hard to watch at this point. They need to have someone that's competent in, which if you're the Lions, I know is a lot to ask for competency, but you got to have somebody else in. For Seattle, they get actually kind of a close call with the Dolphins. Fitzmagic is actually pretty nice, but he wasn't enough. Seattle was able to pull off the W, and the Seahawks are 4-0.
This was your quintessential Seahawks game, hanging around with the team that they should have beaten the tar out of, to quote my grandfather. But, yeah, I mean, just another impressive effort from Russell Wilson to get the job done late and to close out the game. Seattle at 4-0, and even though they still look like the same Seattle Seahawks team, I think they look like a better version of the same Seattle Seahawks team. But they got to keep letting Russ cook.
No, and that is true. For a player that never has an MVP vote yet, I think this year is still in the leading for it. Of course, Aaron Rodgers has a couple things to say about that. We'll get to it later, but pretty good year from him so far, to say the least. Justin Herbert, again, looked pretty solid for the Chargers here. I mean, he really has looked very good in his first few starts. He has to be the main starter going forward, but Tom Brady with a vintage Tom Brady performance where he actually had a good individual game, and he charged up, carved up the Charger D after being down 24-7 as late as the second quarter. And yeah, pretty big win here for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They needed to take this game behind a team that's not very good and the Chargers. And yeah, this one was pretty necessary and impressive for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to pull out a big win.
And props to Brady for turning back the clock, 5 touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, actually fairly impressive from him. I got to tip my hat. Lamar Jackson is back. Ravens bounce back and dominate Washington. Haskins somehow gets 314 yards, but Lamar Jackson looks great both on the ground and through the air. They needed to win this game strong, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, and Washington's not just a winning football team. This is, I mean, the Ravens should have won this game very easily, which they did. There's not much to talk about here. The Ravens are just clearly the better team. We didn't really learn anything about either team from this game, I don't think.
Yeah, we just kind of learned one is still bad and one is still good, which was what we thought coming in. Moving ahead, we have the Panthers-Cardinals game, which, you know what? We got to give the Cardinals some credit. Or the, the Panthers some credit.
Absolutely.
Here. They were a team that we really kind of clowned on preseason, which I still think
was warranted. You really clowned on preseason.
Okay, but I thought that was warranted given what we had coming with them, because you had a division that was on paper very much eclipsing of them. They didn't have much going for them, but I will give it to them. I thought Baylor last season was one of the most overrated 11-1 teams to ever grace a college football field. And for Carolina, yes, they still are looking fairly solid. And I do want to know how much of this game was Carolina being impressive versus the Cardinals being very not impressive.
The Cardinals weren't very impressive, and they really gave up 2 touchdowns to begin the game. And then Carolina was able to just keep that lead. If you give Carolina a lead, Matt Rhule is a coach that wins games. Now, cue your Oklahoma 2019 jokes now. But Matt Rhule is a coach that so far in his college career, with the exception of that 1 year at Baylor, has won games, and his teams have been competitive in every single game. So I don't think it's a surprise at all that we're seeing Carolina overachieve, especially with Joe Brady as the offensive coordinator there.
And that is another thing too, that is a good point, having Brady and his team changing this team up a lot. But even with that, looking at a couple of stats of the game, I mean, Kyler Murray did still have 3 touchdowns, but was limited to just 133 yards through the air. Hopkins, again, limited to just 41 yards on 7 receptions, and Teddy Bridgewater coming out in this game and still throwing an interception, not looking great, but Davis still had a pretty good time with this team. But yeah, pretty nice for this one. Also, this was the first time Teddy Bridgewater ran for a touchdown since 2016 after his devastating knee injury, so pretty big there for them. Next up, we talked plenty about the Texans already, but how about the Vikings? Vikings getting a big win, finally getting their first of the season. Texans dropped to 0-4. But yeah, Minnesota, a team we really liked preseason. We both predicted to win the division, and not a great start, but Dalvin Cook had an excellent game. The Vikings looked much more like the Vikings that we thought they were going to be.
Yeah, and the offense is coming together, and I really think the key to it has been the emergence of Justin Jefferson. So far this year, he is Pro Football Focus's top rated wide receiver, a really special player, I think. And we saw it in college. I mean, he had 4 touchdowns in what, the first half of that Oklahoma game in the semifinal. So, I mean, this kid's obviously a stud. And I think the Vikings just found themselves a gem at the end of the first round.
Next game up is one that I'm not going to say a lot about, frankly, because this game was incredibly boring. Rams-Giants only ended up having a couple of touchdowns all game. 17-9 was your final score. Really, the only thing interesting that happened in this one was the fight at the end of this game between Golden Tate and Jalen Ramsey, which was because Ramsey used to date Tate's sister and then
allegedly
had a child. Yeah, and has a child with her, and then left her for a Las Vegas dancer, was
Exotic Dancer.
Exotic, yes. Which that is what I heard the story of, and I was like, oh, well, then no wonder a fight broke out. So,
yeah, apparently Ramsey was waiting outside the locker for him after the game too.
Good Lord. But yeah, this also was a game, just a fun personal note for me. This was the first game in the history of the NFL where it featured players from my high school playing against each other with Andrew Thomas for the New York Giants and Samuel Sloman for the Los Angeles Rams. So kind of a cool personal note on that, but neat to see my high school showing out big in the big leagues. Next up, we have Colts and Bears. Bears ended up not doing a lot with this game. I thought the Colts were going to win, and I got this down correct. Nick Foles did not look bad. Allen Robinson had a very nice game, but overall, Chicago still didn't score a touchdown until 2 minutes left in the game, which they were known as a really bad first three-quarter team and a very good fourth-quarter team. And now they scored 3 points in the first three quarters combined and eight in the fourth. So technically, yes, they did have their best quarter in the fourth. But when you score 11 points against the Colts, you're not going to win the game, and they didn't win the game.
Well, honestly, I think people are putting more stock in this game for the Chicago Bears than they should. And the only reason I say that is because Indy is the top team in the league in terms of defensive efficiency. So, of course, a team that's not very offensively efficient in Chicago is going to get stifled by this team. I'm interested to see how they play against some of the other top defenses in the league. We'll really get to see how much better Indy is at just shutting down some of these bad offensive teams as we go on in the year.
Other fun fact about this game, I just wanted to see that I saw this on Twitter that was actually pretty funny, that every single time these teams play in an election year, which has actually happened for quite a while, since all the way back, I think, since 2002, that every time these teams play, the winner of the game determines, or at least has had a weird pattern of determining who wins. And every time that the Bears have won, the Democrat nominee has won. And every time the Colts have won, the Republican nominee has won. So just sort of a fun fact there that I guess the NFL game predicted for the November election coming up a little under a month from this episode. But just sort of a weird fun fact I saw on Twitter, and I was like, oh, that's certainly bizarre. So interesting there to see that. Next up, we have the Bills and Raiders. I actually watched a good chunk of this game, was on TV. But again, Josh Allen is just a really good quarterback. And I'll give it to Derek Carr, too. Derek Carr had a good game. He had 311 yards and two touchdowns. But Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen are just looking really, really good. I mean, Allen rushing for one touchdown, throwing for two. And the Bills are 4-0.
And we kept wondering, you know, what's holding back Josh Allen. And some of it is his development and his decision-making. And he's certainly better at those things this year. But the obvious answer was he's missing a number one receiver, and Diggs is balling out this year for this team. They're getting really creative with their offensive play calling. They are unlocking Josh Allen to fit balls into tight windows and throw it to Stephon Diggs over the top where he can run under it. Just an incredible offense this year. The Bills might be the best team in the league.
And
not name the Kansas City Chiefs. I apologize.
I wouldn't go that far.
The Kansas City Chiefs are in their own tier. I think when we're talking about teams that are maybe the second best team, it's got to be the Bills and the Packers that come up as first names.
And I would put the Seahawks in that conversation too. Even despite their weaker performance this week, I still would put them up there. But next up, in terms of a game that was not particularly fun, this was the Sunday Night Football game where the Eagles 49ers, which ended up kind of being a fun game, even though we didn't think it was. It was a very ugly game, but George Kittle had a ridiculous game for San Francisco, but it did not pan out in his favor. The Eagles, with a great fourth quarter, win 25-20 over the 49ers, and the Eagles are 1-2-1 and leading the division. 49ers are 2-2 and sitting near last place. It's pretty interesting how this sort of panned out for the Niners with an absolute slew of injuries, but honestly, Eagles had a ton too. Eagles had a fantastic defensive performance with a pick six and five sacks. Really good start here for a Philadelphia team in a very tough first few games. They finally get a big one that they needed to really play well in. And I think they really did play well in this game.
And maybe it has something to do with how the quarterback sets up the protections pre-snap. But the offensive line was absolutely atrocious for the 49ers. I don't know what was going on with Kyle Shanahan's offense, and maybe it's just a good Eagles D-line. But yeah, overall, not an impressive performance from either team, but the Eagles finally get a win, which was much needed, even though Carson Wentz kind of looked bad again.
Now we have the Chiefs-Patriots game, a game postponed to last night, Monday night, because of Cam Newton's positive COVID-19 test, which he is doing a lot better. I've heard that he is now asymptomatic as of today on Tuesday. But pretty boring start, 6-3 halftime, should have been 6-6, a great sack at the end of the first half to stop Hoyer's drive in the Patriots, which he just should have thrown that away pretty bad.
Brian Hoyer might be the worst quarterback I have ever seen play in an NFL game. I mean, it was Nathan Peterman vibes, but like old and can't move and just takes sacks the entire game.
Yeah, it was really rough. But the Chiefs ended up pulling a pretty solid, fun fourth quarter out of the game. And the Kansas City Chiefs are your first NFL team in the history of football to start 4-0 for four straight seasons. Really impressive what Andy Reid has been able to do for a team that's been stuck in a mediocrity sort of state for a very long time and has now risen to be among the best in the NFL. Perennially, not just this year. And lastly, before we get to teams and players of the week, we have my Atlanta Falcons doing a classic Atlanta Falcons job, which is the second of their classic moves. The first move is to go up big and immediately choke it, but the second move is to never have a lead at all, which is what the Falcons pulled off in this game, which, you know what, you can't choke the lead if you don't have one, which was interesting tactic by a DQ in this game. But Falcons dropped to 0-4 for the first time since I was born in 1999, which is so much fun to see that. Packers looked fantastic in a W behind another solid Rodgers performance. Still wondering how DQ has a job. We're not even worth a rant at this point, just still wondering. DeMonte Kazee actually is out for the entire season with an Achilles injury. He is the fifth Falcons secondary member to be out. I think he's actually the third or fourth safety to be out for the year, so pretty – sad with that. Ricardo Allen being done for the year, as well as Keanu Neal at least being done for right now. And then DeMonte Kazee out. We also had Denard Kinnard out at cornerback. And we had A.J. Terrell, the rookie cornerback, out because he's the first NFL player on the COVID list. And so, yes, we have a secondary that's absolutely torn to shreds. That is admittedly not anyone's fault, even though it is very painful. So I will give us that. But yeah, this team looked pretty inept. I mean, I if there's anything that sums it up pretty nicely, I don't know if you've seen the video of it, but it was the I watched it live, but it was the fourth down and I think three
conversion. Oh yeah, the three open players. Yes,
for Atlanta had one dude that was again, and now Green Bay had the ball at about their own, or no, sorry, about the Atlanta 40, 45, and we had one man at about like the 10-yard line to start the play, and I was like, okay, don't know what you're doing there. And the rest of our team just sort of milled around the middle of the field. And yes, we had three men wide open, each of them at least 15, 20 yards down the field. So I was like, okay, no more defense. And the offense didn't do anything either. Calvin Ridley was the only player in the NFL to have all three of the first three games with over 100 yards. He didn't get a catch. Not one. Mm-hmm. Not even a catch.
Well, Jair Alexander is a stud. Put some respect on that man's name.
And I will respect him for that. He did play a fantastic game. I will give him that. But Julio Jones out in the second half and did not return due to a hamstring injury he's nursing back. But at least for fantasy, I had Todd Gurley, and I was up against Julio Jones and Travis Kelce, and I had a lead. And Gurley had a pretty good game, getting two touchdowns for him. So actually pretty good from Todd Gurley. Julio didn't do much, and Kelce wasn't particularly impressive. So ended up winning fantasy, so I guess it's the small things that count. But, yeah, pretty sad from the Falcons here, but, again, no one is surprised. AFC, NFC teams and players of the week. For me, I have Aaron Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers. I'm aware the Falcons are not a very serious team, but Rodgers played basically a perfect football game, so I'll give credit to him. He is, I think he has the, of the last 15 seasons, he has the best QBR in the first few game, first four games out of any quarterback in the last 15 years. And the previous two that he beat out to get that were Tom Brady and Peyton Manning in their seasons, which both of which they set passing touchdown records and won the MVP award. So potentially Aaron Rodgers could follow in their footsteps. And for my team of the week, I had the Minnesota Vikings for finally overcoming a team that was pretty bad in the Texans, but they needed a really big win on the road and they got one. And they also got Bill O'Brien fired. So I had to put him on for that. And for the AFC, I have Joe Mixon, who had over 150 yards and two scores and a ridiculous outing for the Bengals. And then the Browns for defeating the Dallas Cowboys and doing their job on that end, and also for being really impressive on their own.
Yeah, and so for the NFC, I'm going to do something that I don't think I've ever done, and I'm going to give player of the week to a player whose team actually lost, and that player is George Kittle. 15 receptions, over 180 yards. I mean, just an absolute monster. Numbers that we've hardly ever seen, maybe have never seen from a tight end before. He is an absolute beast, and he was so much fun to watch against the Eagles the other night. And for the team of the week, I've got the Packers. I mean, obviously a very, very impressive 4-0 effort for them, and they are clearly the favorites in the NFC so far. They have to be. And then to go off with the NFC, I've got Josh Allen as my player of the week. I'm not sure how many players of the week that is for Josh Allen now, but
I know I've had him twice.
there is really something to be said for leading your team to 4-0. I think that's a big deal, and he's obviously played out of his mind over that span of games. And my team was also the Browns, because when you put up 49 points on the Cowboys and cause everyone to talk about them on Monday, you got to get team of the week, right?
I would think so. I mean, hey, I'm agreeing with you on this one, so I'm all in on it.
Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Blanket Coverage Podcast. Make sure you tune in on Thursday to get our previews. We will try to be better at recording those. Last week was a little bit crazy, but we are going to get better at uploading those on time and before the games. And until then, peace out, y'all.
Peace out, y'all.